Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and today I have the bull behind Mystic Bull Games, Paul Wolf, with me. How you doing, Paul?
Doing good.
That's great, man. God, I'm still tired from Gary Con. How about you?
I think I'm pretty well recovered. It wasn't like last year. Last year I got sick for a week.
I was sick. I mean, I missed a day of work. It was terrible, but it was like a week later after we got back, so I'm not sure why that is. But I guess I should get back to the show. So I gave you a small introduction there. Are you the sole proprietor of Mystic Bull Games?
No, I have three partners. A couple of the guys I've known since I was a teenager. We played together. We're basically been best friends all of our lives. And then another guy I picked up when I worked at Dell. When DCC came out, we kind of decided to throw our hat in, made a company, and started publishing.
That's pretty awesome. When I first met you, I think, I don't know if it was at GaryCon or did we start playing online before that?
Seems like we started playing online, but I can't remember.
That's what I would guess, too. But, I mean, it was at least a couple years ago playing Black Powder, Black Magic at GaryCon that we probably hung out the most.
Right.
Normally, I would talk about what we've played together, but this is my first podcast since GaryCon, and I'm going to be doing a lot of podcasts just this week to get ahead because, like, when I'm sick, I have time. I thought we would just talk specifically about the games that we played together at GaryCon. So the first one that I have is the Black Powder, Black Magic game with Eric Hoffman. Is that right?
Yep.
So do you have any initial thoughts on that game that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I was putting together the newest issue of Damn, and that's kind of my editorial. It's all the games that I played there, including that one, were emergent, right? So this idea of emergent story seems like keeps coming back to the OSR, right? So in that game, Eric Hoffman started the game, and then a thing would happen. Anybody that failed their saving throw from this thing happening had to turn in their characters and get a new character. The person that failed at the worst became the GM. And so automatically, you have the GM, who was Eric, handing the story over to somebody else who has no background whatsoever in what's going on, and they just have to, on the fly, run the adventure. I thought that was a pretty amazing way. I think it turned out great.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was pretty, when he came up with the idea, it wasn't exactly what we had planned, but it was a good,
right,
you know, stopgap for in case we didn't get enough players, which we didn't really try that hard to get enough players because I really think he wanted to do it that way. And I was fine with that. But the idea of just handing people, you know, basically we were playing Treasure Vaults of Zatabod with Black Powder, Black Magic characters of third level. We had an idea of just a vague background of what was going on, but very slim. And for people who don't even own Treasure Vaults of Zatabod, it'd be something else to say, okay, the last thing you fought was some Nazis making a movie in front of a some kind of Pharaoh's tomb. What are you going to do now? It was pretty interesting, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked it.
I was concerned that people wouldn't want to be the game master, and obviously we wouldn't make them if they didn't, but during the game and after, I continually heard stories from people that once they saw what was going on, they were like, oh, I really want a GM. And then they were thinking about what they might want to be doing as the game master.
Right.
In its own way, you would think maybe that you would be not playing your character as much, but it's a con game, so there isn't a ton of playing a specific character anyway a lot of times.
Right.
But this made people even more engaged because now they're thinking about what they might want to change from the story or whatever. But anyhow, that was a pretty cool game, and I would agree with you. It was probably the most engaging game I played at the whole con, on or off the books, just because of that concept. So who was your favorite GM? I'm calling you out, man.
I don't really remember who did what, other than Eric. Like you mentioned the Nazi thing, and that immediately fired something in my brain to file away and use later. So, but yeah, other than that, I mean, it was just, it was so off the cuff that I think everybody did just a great job of just picking up the story, but picking up the ball and just running with it in a different direction, right?
Yeah, definitely. I was really impressed with Grady Moore because, honestly, he was the first one to fail his saving throw that became the GM that didn't know we had already planned on doing this because obviously you, me, and Eric knew what was going on. But after when you became the GM, he was like, oh, it's just going to be them three sharing it. But then it's like, nope, you're the GM now. And he was like, what?
Yeah.
He did a pretty good job. He just leafed through the module and picked a picture he liked and then ran that encounter. So
yep.
It really worked perfectly, I thought. So I would have to give him the biggest star of the night as the GM. All right, so the other GaryCon game we played was using DWD's beta rules for Frontier Space, which I've talked about on the podcast before. It's a retro clone of Star Frontiers, and it's Bill Logan and Larry Moore, right?
Right.
And aren't those the same guys that were doing all this Frontier Space stuff on? It wasn't called Frontier. The Frontier Spacemen basically been releasing stuff on Drive Through for years. They're like on issue 25 or something.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a license or what's going on because they're also distributing the old Star. They were distributing the old Star Frontiers books as well. So maybe they had a license. I'm not sure, but I know that's who I used to go to get. You know, it's like, oh, I want to look at this Star Frontiers module. I'll just go to their site and grab it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they obviously have a deep love for Star Frontiers.
Yeah, huge fans. They're probably the biggest fans. And now they're putting out this game, and we're both play testers on it. And we're in the same groups, but we also have our own groups as well. And they even gave me the okay to talk about it as much as we wanted to on the mics. So is there anything specific you want to talk about as far as Frontier Space goes?
Yeah, I've used it now probably in four different kind of sci-fi settings. The one that I ran for you guys was set kind of in a Firefly universe. Actually, it was set directly in the Firefly universe. The first one I ran was for my home game, and it ended up being more of a cyberpunk crime game, but played so smoothly. And then we did a couple of different specifically space battle type sessions just to test out the space combat rules, which are the best I've seen so far.
That's awesome. So like you said, at the GaryCon, because that's sort of what we're talking about is the games we played, you used Frontier Space as the system. The setting was obviously Firefly. And right. You used some kind of like the board from the board game, but you didn't have it with you at the con.
Right.
Because, I mean, you did travel from Texas, so I'll give you a break there. But I thought it was really fun. I mean, we were terrible verse criminals because we all got caught before the end. But
right.
It was I thought it was still a pretty fun game. For late on a Saturday, because, I mean, it's the end of the con almost, and you're tired, and we were all waiting for the beer exchange, right? The cultural beer exchange, so we had right. Other things on our mind, but I thought it was pretty fun. I would definitely play it again, that's for sure.
Had you played Frontier Space before, or is that the first time?
That was the first time to that extent of, like, a real session, because, I mean, I did a little bit online with Eric and Jose. That's about it. I hadn't played it otherwise.
Gotcha.
And honestly, I like the system. It does feel simple. It's almost everything is 2D10, which is very nice. And the idea of using the advantage with the 2D10 is kind of clever because if you're on advantage, you just use the higher as the 10s. And if you're on disadvantage, then you use the lower die number as the 10s. So that's pretty simple, really.
Right.
I wonder if you ever checked to see like on any dice what that does probability-wise to making your number better or lower.
No.
It's pretty significant.
Yeah, definitely. I like the system a lot because it's very flexible. So you may be someone who likes to shoot things. So you have this high marksmanship skill, but you can also use that marksmanship skill for other things like identifying certain weapons, using a different stat like intelligence or whatever.
Yeah, that's cool.
Or detecting when someone has a hidden weapon. You know, anything sort of related to a marksmanship type weapon, you can kind of mix and match the skill with other attributes. So it's really, I like the system a lot. It flows really fast and it's simple.
We can go into it a little deeper. Like there's six attributes and they're very similar to any other OSR game. And then they have a list of what do you think? 10 skills or something.
Right.
You pick one of those and that's your primary skill and you only get a minus 10. So your other attributes are going to be a range. If you use the standard array between 45 and 65, I believe. And then if your primary stat at first level is going to be a minus 10. So usually you're going to be using your best attribute in that. So you're probably going to have a 55 to 60% chance of being successful with that skill, right?
Right. So yeah, minor correction. You get one skill that's at plus zero and then two skills that are minus 10. and then everything else is minus 20 at a disadvantage. You're pretty focused on three skills, but those skills, like I was saying, are so broad. They're not too broad where you can just do anything, but they're broad enough that your character has a little bit of flesh to them. So I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that, and I would tell anyone to check it out. And at first, I mean, I was a little disappointed with you roll dice, and then you fit those dice into this other thing, and then that comes up with some other number that you use. But when we made characters for the convention game, I mean, we were done in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very simple, and we were done in 10 minutes making characters, and we were playing. And we had some very different characters, you know. We did the adventuring party thing and kind of spread out, and we had a nice... We had the stevedore of the ship, who was our captain. But it was a fun game, and I really appreciate you running that. All right, so the next segment of this introduction here is my Everything About You segment, where I like to pick a single thing about myself that the listeners don't know and talk about it briefly. And then if the guests would do the same, that would be awesome. But I don't want you to talk about me. I want you to talk about you, of course, Paul.
Right.
All right. So for me, I thought I would say that I'm actually bipolar. And so sometimes when you meet me, I could be kind of not so nice. And other times I'm really nice. So it's interesting doing podcasts or working or even being involved in regular life with this situation. But I guess I just wanted to share that. You got anything, Paul?
My usual go-to is that when I was 18, I joined the Army and I ended up driving a tank for 4 years. So that was probably one of the most formative things in my early life was learning to drive a tank and wishing that I could still drive a tank.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's not as cool as for the longest time I thought you were the actual tank commander.
No, I'm the driver. Yeah.
In some ways, that's pretty cool too, because I mean, you actually probably did more with the tank than the commander, right? You're driving all the time where he could just be standing around doing nothing, I guess. I don't know.
You're either driving or you're fixing it. That's pretty much what the driver does.
All right, so I have a, believe it or not, we're on episode, this is probably going to be episode 8, and there's actually people that listen to this show. And I know that because I actually received an email from someone to the HobbsandFriends@misdirectedmark.com email, and I thought I'd read it to y'all and thank the author. The email's from Scott Malthouse, who is actually the author of USR, the unbelievably simple role-playing game that we talked about in episode 1, Eric and I did. And so he just said, hi, folks. I've just listened to the first episode of the podcast and wanted to say a quick thanks for talking USR. I'm super excited about what Jay has done with the game, and it makes me so happy that you're getting enjoyment from the system. The campaign sounds amazing. Anyway, keep up the good work. You've earned another subscriber, and I'll be mentioning on Trollish Delver. Cheers, Scott. Well, thanks a lot for sending the email, Scott. And if anyone wants to email the show, we'll read it, we'll appreciate it, and we'll answer and probably talk about it on the show. Trollish Delver is his blog, HobbsandFriends@misdirectedmark.com. So thanks again, Scott, for that. And believe it or not, I also have, you're very surprised by this, aren't you, Paul?
What?
That I actually have a review on iTunes.
What?
And I got an email, so I know that you haven't done any of these things. You don't even listen to the podcast, I don't think. I'm just kidding. All right, so I'm going to read this review. I'm not going to read them all because I'm sure there'll be so many that it would take up a whole episode, but that's a joke. All right, so this review is from Nick56. It's a 5-star review. So really, really good job. I have been listening to a number of OSR-related podcasts like Dead Game Society, Roll for Initiative, Gaming and BS, and Shooting Womp Rats, D6 Star Wars. I need to say that this podcast is interesting, well done, and off to a good start. As a gamer in my 40s who's played D&D in the 80s and then moved on to Marvel, Star Frontiers, Twilight 2000, etc., I just want to say I am really enjoying both the content and the quality of the podcast. Keep up the good work. I enjoy listening to this one and would recommend it to my friends. So that's really awesome. Nick56, whoever you are out there in iTunes land, I appreciate the review. So he even talks about Star Frontier, so there you go. If you want to play a new retro clone, look for Frontier Space from DWD Studios. You got anything to add about any of that, Paul?
Nope.
I wouldn't expect you to.
You got fans now, though. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, other than you. I mean, I have 3 with those 2 and you, right? Well, you have to be a fan now. You're on the show.
Yeah.
For the game of the week, I wanted to talk about, I'm going to have 2 of them. I mention you a lot, Paul, when I talk about the game of the week that I play with, because you and I play a lot of games with Eric and Jose and Bird, right?
Right.
And Cody. Can't forget Cody. So we're going to talk about two different games. The first one is going to be a session we played of Frontier Space. I forgot this other one that we played earlier, of the Galaxy, using your setting book. What's that called? Galaxy War?
Galaxy War 1939.
1939. But isn't there something about Oros in there too?
Yeah, Legacy of the Oros is the name of the module.
All right, yeah, Legacy of the Oros. So we won't talk a lot about mechanics because we already did that when we talked about the Garrycon game, but Galaxy War, what can you tell me about that briefly?
So the idea is an alternate history, obviously. Early 1939, there are these brush wars raging across the galaxy. So the nations of the world have gone to space sometime in the late 1920s, early 30s, and they've taken their politics with them. So this is kind of prelude to World War II when things were kind of ramping up. So it's the Deutsches Stern Reich, which is obviously Germany, and the United Kingdom Planets, which is obviously England, and sort of their secret war against each other. The characters are supposed to belong to this organization called Space Operations Executive. That's kind of the summary, I guess, of the setting.
And so that the SOE, isn't that like a game off of Steam that we talk about sometimes where some guys belong to a specific group? What was that called?
Yeah, SOE, it was Special Operations Executive. It was Britain's, what they called, ungentlemanly warfare group that they formed to basically fight the Nazis.
Isn't there a game like called Sentinels or something that we used to talk about all the time? It was like Jaded Empire. You know what I'm talking about?
I can't remember the name of it.
I don't know, but that's what you told me about it, and I played it, and it's fun.
The name of it is Silent Storm.
Yeah, Silent Storm. So did you take some of your thoughts from that game, or was that an inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been fascinated with the SOE groups for a long time. Anything World War II, but specifically that, and did a lot of reading on it, and did some stuff with D20 on it back in the day, and so it's always something that I always wanted to come back to. And then once White Star came out, I don't know if you're familiar with White Star, I kind of merged those two together and just wrote the module and put it out there.
It was pretty interesting. I really liked the way that you had added it and kind of made it a hex crawl on Roll20.
Right.
But with Frontier Space rules and still did it as a hex crawl. This usually is something that I was going to talk at the end about my favorite aspect of the game or something, but you had a whole thing that we're supposed to be doing in the module. I won't go into specific details. So if anyone buys it, they can run it for their people. And you know how many fans we have out there, and I don't want someone to, you know, get a spoiler alert or anything like that. But anyway, so we're on this hex crawl map and we land on this planet and we get to choose kind of where we want to go, but kind of like World War II was, you didn't always land exactly where you want to be, right? Because we're on a drop ship or whatever. And I think you were taking that aspect off of World War II when you come out of the planes. You don't always land exactly where you want.
No, almost never.
Yeah, almost never.
Yeah, almost never.
And so we spend the next hour and a half wandering around this map like it's a hex crawl, getting into adventures before we even get to it. I mean, the game was over. We never actually got to anything that was specifically set up in the adventure, but we did do a lot of the random encounters that you are so famous for, really, right?
Right. World renowned.
Well, you did just mention it on that other podcast that Julian Burnick might be involved with, but I'm not sure if I want to mention it exactly. No, I'm just kidding. It's Spellburn. And Paul was just on there recently. But we always save the best podcast for last.
Right.
So which one are you going on after this? No. I thought that was really interesting with that game. You don't even have to have that aspect planned out ahead of time, where if you have enough random tables and you have some visuals for the people to be engaged with, the game can be just as good as any other game, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this thing grew out of a one-page pay-what-you-want adventure called Bug Hunt that I did for White Star. And all it was a hex crawl. As far as I'm concerned, that's the way to play, right?
Right.
The DM puts stuff out there, the players go find it, and they decide what's important, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of how most people would say you should run a game anyway, is by
right.
What the GM and the players find the most important. And the GM, obviously, is making what he wants, but at the same time, you listen to your players, and the random hex crawl is almost the perfect way to let them grab onto whatever they desire. I really thought that was a cool that it definitely translated well. The Frontier Space System worked great for it. The adventure is good, and I would recommend it to anybody. I'd ask you how you feel as the... what do you think as your other products and what you've learned? I mean, it's White Star, which was fairly popular for a while in the OSR, for sure. What do you think about the product?
I personally love it, but it also gives me pain just because it not a lot of people picked it up, so... So I wasn't sure if it was the idea of this World War II in space thing or if it was, you know, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed writing it, and I really enjoyed running it for my own group. And kind of like the game that I ran for you guys, the World War II, you know, you guys were commandos behind enemy lines kind of thing. That's kind of the type of modern war game that I like, is that you still have sort of freedom of movement in a military setting, but there's also mission.
Yeah, I really like that game too, and I thought we would bring that up briefly. And I may actually have Jason Schultes on the show to talk specifically about that World War II game that you ran for us a few months ago. Yeah. I really like that concept, and it's really fun to learn about. I'm a big fan of exploration, and I think that's an important aspect for a player to have in the hex crawl environment. Because if you're not that interested in what you're finding and exploring and all you really want to do is interact with people, it's not necessarily the best style of game for that. But if it's exploring is one of your primary goals as a player, then I'm not sure you can get any better than Hexcrawl, because not only do the players get to learn as they go, so does the GM.
Right.
So that's really a cool thing. So do you have anything else to talk about as far as Galaxy War goes? Mm-mm. All right. Well, I'm good with it too, then. Let's talk about Philic Isles, which I've mentioned on the podcast multiple times because we try to play it as much as we can, usually once every other week or so, but sometimes more than that. It's called Bravos of the Philic Isles, and we nominally use Labyrinth Lord AEC, right?
Right.
Some other concepts from that game. It's totally open. It's a hex crawl. It does have a mega dungeon placed in it, which is pretty cool, and I don't know if I've seen that before. I've heard people talk about it, but I'm not sure they've done it before. I really enjoy it, and I would say that's probably John Bird's favorite game that we play, because he talks about it a lot.
Is he really?
He loves that subgenre of Gaelic kind of feel, is that what you'd call it?
Yeah, so it's basically Dark Ages England, so yeah, it's going to be Saxon, Gaelic, Vikings, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, in fact, you made us a full primer, and you changed the entire equipment list, and why don't you just talk about some of that stuff?
Yeah, so I ran into a guy's Tumblr, and I'm not going to remember his name, but what he did was he took these Dark Ages weapons, and he statted them out for 5th edition D&D, but did art for all of them, which was really cool. It's very compelling. It immediately sent me off reading and learning about England almost all of Europe, really, but mostly England between the time the Romans left to the Norman invasion. So, you know, a span of hundreds of years there where England was kind of on its own, and it wasn't a country. There were many, many countries there, and, you know, basically they were learning to become the English people, I guess, is one way to say it. But anyway... So that inspired me to do that, and I ran a game at home using DCC with that in mind, essentially. And then when I decided I wanted to run a game for you guys, that's what I grabbed and just converted it over to Labyrinth Lord.
One of the aspects I like about it is that you obviously have some deep thoughts about it. I don't know how much you have written down concerning the history, but we just kind of fall upon it as we do. There's not a... You don't have this huge... Like I say, you wrote a primer for us, but I mean... It's mostly just the kind of the rules and how the rules work without us having to go back to look at actually the Labyrinth Lord advanced compendium thing. All we can do is we can just look at your, it's not like it's a ton of background information. In fact, it's so minimal that no one knows it until we run into it during the game. And then we're like, oh, what's this? Oh, I didn't put in the primer. You just learn at it as you go. So it's very, not only are you exploring the setting or exploring the map and finding stuff out, and learning about the history, you're also learning about that whole vast you know, plethora of information and backstory you have that gives it more of that three-dimensional or realistic feel, in my opinion.
Cool.
I really appreciate that. And I really believe that we all do that in our hex crawls. I know I have a bunch of it in my own game that no one ever reads, but, and I don't really hold any, I don't hold anybody to it, but I know it's there. And then you guys can find it as you explore. So like I say, right. When you play though, you don't care. You just want to kill stuff. So I can appreciate that too. For whoever does care about it, it's like we said, the GM listens to their players and you just keep throwing stuff at the wall. And then whatever sticks is what you kind of start to delve into or figure out. So that's really cool, and I really appreciate you running that game, and I hope we can play it more. So, yep. It's also drop-in, drop-out, right? So we don't have to – you don't have to make every session to continue to play the game and enjoy it. So,
yeah, I've ran it just for two of you guys, actually, a couple of times.
Yeah, two different times. In fact, I have three different characters right now.
Yeah, we sort of broke the rule of everybody has to get back to town before the end of the session. Because I put Baromaze in there. So you guys had just found Baromaze and got into it and didn't want to leave. So we kind of ended the session there. So we have characters that are kind of stuck there until everybody can get back together at the same time.
Yeah, we did that. And then the next week, the only people that could play were me and your son, Nick. So I had to make a character for that. And so we were playing. And then the next time you played, I couldn't be there. And so Nick played that character and the other guys played their characters. And then they got captured by a bunch of lizard beastmen or something. And so I didn't want to bring either of my other two characters into that situation. So I made another character because I was sure he was going to die anyway, but he didn't. So now I have three.
I know. You guys completely got out of that. That was so disconcerting.
You're just a pussy.
Yeah, I think so.
You're just a pussy, GM. You just let us get away with it all. I can't even remember how we got out of it. Oh, it was the command. I commanded the leader and stunned him for long enough, and we just got lucky with rolls after that.
Yeah, I think so.
Either that or you are just a real pussy GM. I don't know. But there was a cool thing in that too, because after that, then we decided we were going to try and track down these guys that messed with us. And we ended up finding a whole war party that had sailed across the inner inlets of the stream that are kind of attacking the area that we call home, right?
Yep. That's what it looks like.
My question to you is that something you had planned, or was that a random encounter that just ended up turning into that?
It was a random encounter. So I have an insane random encounter table that I'm now kind of regretting. It's really fun to make it, but it's really difficult to use at the table. So what I did was I went through each random encounter and then made basically three versions fleshed out of each encounter. And that was one of them, which was a war party. So yeah, random encounter that I kind of pre-randomized.
Yeah, so there you go. It's one more aspect of the random encounters creating emergent storytelling. And now that one encounter is going to change the campaign in some ways just because we know of that thing happening. All right, so I kind of already went over my favorite things about the game and a specific topic. So I wanted to talk briefly about some of your other products, specifically DAM Magazine. That's an acronym for something about news.
DCC Adventure Magazine and News, yep.
Okay, so that's a pretty cool thing, and that was the winter edition that just came out, right?
Correct.
And then the spring edition is coming out in June, and you hope to have copies at North Texas RPG Con, right?
Correct.
That should be awesome. Another one of your products that I've been interested in, and you have threatened to run many times, but I've never had the opportunity to play, is The Curse of Crag Bridge.
This adventure is in the world that you guys are playing.
Oh, okay, nice.
It is possible that you will run into it eventually. It's an adventure I originally wrote for Labyrinth Lord and just released Pay What You Want, just because it was in my head and I wanted to get it out. And then I'd always intended, it was intended to be the lead-in to a much larger mega dungeon, which I also have, but I'd always also intended to convert it to TCC because that had been the system of choice in our home. So, yeah, I did that. Since I already had it in Labyrinth Lord, I went ahead and converted it to Swords of Wizardry and released two different versions of it. But it's basically just a location dungeon crawl in an old bridge tower.
Okay, well, it sounds pretty cool. Like I said, I haven't read it. I own PDF copies of it. And I have a ton of your other products that I've made you sign every single time, much to your chagrin, usually.
So silly.
those are two pretty cool things. So if you want to see anything that Paul's put out, then you should check those two products out. All right. So I want to talk about the state of the OSR topic. It's this idea of minimalism versus, or not even necessarily versus, but minimalism and maximalism in background approaches. Okay, so the idea came from Joseph Manola on his blog, Against the Wicked City. And I'll have a link in the show notes. But basically, he's talking about this concept of when you have a background for a setting, the more deep and broad it is, well, usually it's going to be deep and broad in the GM's mind, at least, but not necessarily to the players. The more that you expect to tell your players, no matter how vast you say it is, the more depth that they know about it, the smaller and cramped it'll feel. What do you think about that?
I think that comes out of things like Forgotten Realms and Greyhawk, and the more that's crammed in there. So all of those things had these, you know, they had books, they had novels that they had written about it, and they had all of these campaign materials. And so if you didn't know all the campaign materials, then you were either lost or you were kind of hemmed in, right? So I think I agree with that. I think that when it's overdeveloped, it's harder for the players to write their own stories.
Yeah, and in many ways, it's harder for the GM to write their own stories.
Absolutely.
You write yourself into a corner. That's why I always feel more excited and open about the vast, huge tableau about a brand new campaign than I do something I've been running for months on end, because for one thing, I kind of get sick of it and I have ADD in some ways concerning what I'm playing. Not only the system I'm using, but also the setting that it's in. But in another, it's like, yeah, you've kind of written yourself into certain areas, which are good because you're actually starting to get that feeling that, oh, they're starting to know the setting as well as you are. But at the same time, where do we go from here? We've already kind of looked at a bunch of stuff. But anyhow, it's kind of an interesting article, and it really sang home to me an issue I had with one of my buddies, Ray Case, in my White Sands campaign a few years ago that I ran online with Adventure Conqueror King. And he was playing a member of this Bedouin tribe, and he wanted me to explain to him, you know, well, what's my background and my character? How should I know all these things? And I was just like, I wanted to give him three sentences and just go and be happy. But for him, it was very difficult because he wanted to fit within my vision. So he needed to know as much information as he could to do it. But I didn't really have a vision yet. I only had three sentences. So it's a lot easier if your characters come from somewhere else to explore, or you just kind of gloss over that and let them explore the setting as they come and don't try to get too detailed, like we've already discussed in our different hex crawl type games. So it's a pretty cool thing. So check it out. All right. So I want to give a shout out to three of my patrons, as I'm supposed to do every episode and sometimes forget. And Chris always helps me out with when he does the editing. But this episode is brought to you all by Gabriel Perez Gallardi, my good friend from Spain, Uruguay, Spain, Eric Jensen, the master of Trident Con, and Mike Jones, the guy I met at North Texas last year. I'm looking forward to seeing Mike at North Texas in June. You got anything that you want to close out with before I tell people how to find us?
No, I don't think so. Thanks a lot for having me on. It was fun.
Oh man, we've been talking about it forever. I think you just wanted to do a Spellburn first. I don't know. So how could people reach you if they wanted to, Paul?
My website's probably the best way to do it, and it's www.mysticbowl.com.
How would they reach you there?
And I'm also on Google Plus.
All right. So yeah, he's Paul Wolf with an E at the end of Wolf. He's the alpha of the Wolf Clan. You can find me at Twitter at Hobbs Indeed, or at the Twitter feed for Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, which is at OSRN Hobbs. There is a Patreon where you too can become a patron and be mentioned on the show. And you'll also get the zine if you follow at a $4 level, which I swear to you should be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Someone's just really slow on the writing. I'm not sure who that would be, but it's probably me. So you can find that at www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. There also is a Hobbs and Friends of the OSR G Plus community, 227 members strong. So join up and get in on all the awesome discussion from just 2 months. That's pretty good. I'm excited, Bob.
That is pretty good.
Hobbs and Friends is a member of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs.